Today, the descent and landing on the moon. We are now within 2 minutes of being 101 hours into that flight, and about 35 minutes away from the firing of the big descent engine on the lunar module Eagle. We'll return to our live coverage in just a few moments. Now, from the Voice of America newsroom, a summary of late world news.
The Soviet space vehicle, Luna 15, shifted to a new and lower orbit of the moon today. Scientists at Britain's Jodrell Bank Observatory reported that the Luna is now closer to the U.S. Apollo mothership, but that they see no danger of any collision. The mission of the Soviet craft is still unclear. Egyptian and Israeli aircraft crossed the Suez Canal ceasefire line today to attack each other's positions. Egypt says it shot down 17 Israeli planes. Israel says it lost 2 planes and shot down 5 Egyptian jets. At last word, heavy ground action was continuing in the area. The Executive Committee of India's ruling Congress Party today rejected a demand that Morarji Desai be reinstated as Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister. Mr. Desai resigned because he disagreed with the government's plans to nationalize India's banks. The chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Earl Wheeler, said today he does not think the current lull in the fighting in South Vietnam reflects a political move by the communists. He told newsmen in Saigon, "There have been spells of limited action in the past, followed by new enemy offensives." Massachusetts police told a newsman today that they plan to charge Senator Edward Kennedy with leaving the scene of an accident. When the senator's car ran off a bridge into 2 meters of water early yesterday, a young woman with him was killed. Senator Kennedy himself was apparently dazed. He did not report the accident until morning, or about 8 hours after it occurred. Briefly, these other items in the news. Yugoslavia and Egypt were reported to have agreed that a ministerial meeting of non-aligned nations should be held this year. The first Pan-African Cultural Festival opens in Algiers tomorrow. A Canadian civil servant reportedly will go on trial in the Czechoslovak town of Ústí tomorrow on charges of spying for an unnamed third country. Czechoslovak-born Rudolf Halota, who emigrated in 1951, was arrested last January when he returned to visit relatives. No details of the charges against him have been disclosed. Cuba today welcomed a small Soviet naval task force, the first Soviet war vessels ever to visit the island. Thousands of Cubans gathered along the waterfront to witness the arrival of the flotilla. And President Nixon today joined in prayers for the safety of the U.S. astronauts who will shortly set foot on the moon. Astronaut Frank Borman joined Mr. Nixon at the White House church services. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Jack Moyles reporting.
From our Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, the Voice of America bringing you continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Today, the descent and moon landing by Apollo 11. We're now 101 hours and 2 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11, approximately 45 to 46 minutes ago at 17 hours 47 GMT, we had the undocking of the two craft, Eagle, the landing craft, Columbia, the command module. A short time later, at about 18 hours 11, we began the separation maneuver. That is, once again, the firing of the small thrusters on the command module, separating the craft even further. At undocking, they had separated up to about 15 meters. They have now separated very slowly, to a distance, I believe, of about 2 kilometers. Ultimately, they will go in this first maneuver to a separation of about 5 kilometers. We are now about 30 minutes away from the firing of the big descent engine on the lunar module Eagle, a firing that will take them down to within 15 kilometers of the surface of the moon, the first major phase of the descent. From there comes the critical 12 minutes or so, or a longer period than that, actually, bringing them to the surface of the moon. Let's get a status report on these maneuvers as we call in correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
The Lunar Module Eagle and Command Module Columbia are now going across the center of the moon as we look at it from the Earth. In 25 minutes from now, they will move around the west side, that dark portion as you're looking at it from the Earth. You can possibly see a little of it in Earth shine if you have a full moon. If you have a clear area wherever you are there, the moon is not full, of course. It's a crescent. They're moving at 4,000 kilometers per hour. Both spacecraft are about 111 kilometers above the lunar surface, and they are drifting very, very slowly apart after a small rocket maneuver by the command module a few moments ago. They will drift apart to some 2 kilometers distance between now and the time that the lunar module will fire its main engine behind the moon and begin to descend from 111 kilometers above the surface down to about 15 kilometers above the surface. That to come in just about 30 minutes from now. At the moment, the two are still orbiting the moon, moving at orbital velocity of just under 4,000 kilometers per hour, 111 kilometers above the surface, moving around over the dark portion of the moon, and within 23 minutes from now, they should go behind the moon, and we will lose radio contact for them for about 30 minutes. Bill?
Rhett Turner, we are standing by, waiting for the end of these separation maneuvers, and, of course, that dramatic moment when we fire that big descent engine on the lunar module. That will be one of the more exciting moments, I would say, and starting the landing craft really on its way down.
I might just summarize some of the activities going on the spacecraft at this moment. The lunar module with Commander Neil Armstrong aboard and lunar module pilot Buzz Aldrin are going through a constant realigning of their abort guidance system, the AGS, which you may hear mention of, AGS. This is another one of those words made up from a group of initials, AGS, abort guidance system, or PINGS, PGNCS, primary guidance and navigation system. You heard a few moments ago the testing of the VHF, or very high frequency ranging devices, a radio system by which the command and service modules communicate with each other while they're separated there in the vicinity of the moon. The rendezvous radar has to be tested out. The radar is aboard the lunar module. This is one of the important duties of Armstrong and Aldrin at this point, as the two spacecraft are drifting very slowly apart up to a distance of some 2 kilometers. You have heard new pads, as they're called, new bits of information from the ground as to relative positioning of the two spacecraft. You've heard them passed up from mission control. Some of this information has been fed automatically into the computers of both Eagle, the lunar module, and Columbia, the command module. And some of the information has been passed up verbally by capsule communicator Charles Duke to astronauts in the two spacecraft.
On those P-76s, a friendly reminder from you, Fido, add half the burn time to the TIG, over.
Those P-76s, this is one of those updates. And that was Charlie Duke mentioning that to one of the spacecraft there, that one fast word from the ground up to either Eagle or Columbia at that point. They're very, very busy going through all of this engineering procedure and making sure that the two spacecraft are well in touch with the Earth and that all of the systems, and particularly the computerized mechanisms aboard the spacecraft, are exactly aligned as they should be for this important descent and touchdown maneuver. You want to make sure that the command module is in its proper place above, in orbit, remaining 111 kilometers above the lunar surface as the lunar module, Eagle, descends. Because if it should have to abort or cancel its landing attempt and fire the ascent stage of the engine, then astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin want to know exactly where that command module is in orbit above them. This dictates when they and the range or the time span in which they may perform abort maneuvers, right down to touchdown and within a few minutes after touchdown.
We're
very busy at this moment.
I believe I telescoped time a bit when I was summarizing a few minutes ago between the descent orbit insertion, that is the firing of that descent engine, and the reaching of that 50,000-foot mark, or about 15 kilometers above the lunar surface. There's about an hour of time that lapses between the two events. I had it happening, I believe, within 10 or 15 minutes. We'll get the descent burn of the lunar module at about 19 hours 5 Greenwich Mean Time, and then what we call PDI, that is the final descent, at about 20 hours 5 Greenwich Mean Time. These are rough times. They will vary a bit in actual time.
The computers in the Mission Control Center are constantly grinding out this sort of information, analyzing and reanalyzing, tracking spacecraft relative positions, and coming up with new figures and new information which could cause these things to vary a second or two and even a minute or two here or there. Yes.
Excuse me, Rat. Go ahead.
The first one of these things which affected the flight in any substantial manner occurred when three of four mid-course correction burns were canceled as the spacecraft were connected and sailing between the Earth and the Moon. This caused the combined craft to arrive at the Moon 4 minutes earlier than originally planned. Every time one of these small rocket thrusters or one of the major engines is fired, it will vary some of these planned bits of data and timings just a little.
Let me ask our NASA colleagues for a moment if they would to describe this navigational system, or there are two systems, as Rhett Turner was describing a few minutes ago, the PINGS, the primary navigation system, and the AGS, and how they operate in this descent. Eventually, when we get closer to the Moon, the radar part of the system actually takes over, doesn't it? Bill Land?
That's right, Bill. At approximately 50,000 feet, or that low point in the initial descent of the lunar module, the landing radar will be able to make contact then with the lunar surface. I mean, the signals will rebound and be read into the system such that it can begin determining its altitude through that radar system. Prior to that time, the navigation system is all inertial. That is, it's with reference to an inertial plane, which is set up on board the spacecraft with a gyroscopic system. With reference to those gyros and that plane of reference of the gyros, the spacecraft is maneuvered to specific attitudes, and certain thrusters are burned to do that, and the main engines, in this case, a descent propulsion system, is fired on schedule and at the proper attitude to take it down to the lunar surface. That attitude, Bill, changes as they proceed down, and that's done through a program system, a taped program, which is in a computer on board the spacecraft. So it takes all these things. It takes the landing radar, the computer, the stable platform, as we call it, for the inertial reference. All of these things have to work together to navigate the craft to the surface.
Well, Bill, does the landing radar tend to update the pings, as they're called, once it's locked in at this 40,000 feet that you talked about?
Yes, it's a continuous feed into the program in the computer, which updates the navigation that the pings is has determined beforehand, or in real time, actually, such that final corrections can be made. And as the spacecraft proceeds down this path toward the surface, that landing radar data continually updates the navigation system and continually revises the calculations right up to the point or very close to the point of landing.
Marlowe?
Yeah, and then, of course, prior to the time we start operating with the landing radar, these constant variations in the flight path and so forth that Rhett Turner has been talking about is a subject for all these update pads that are being transmitted to the spacecraft. They're continually updating the inertial gyro systems so that they will be correctly plotting out the flight course.
Rhett Turner, what altitude do they hope to have the landing radar lock in?
Let's go to mission control, briefly.
In preparation for a go-no-go decision on the descent orbit insertion.
Well, we were listening to Doug Ward there in mission control as he was giving us some information about the two spacecraft. You asked, I believe, Norm, at what altitude does the radar lock in?
Yes, what altitude do they hope to have a radar lock?
Around 50,000 feet is the normal range limit of the radar. At this point, it begins to become more and more accurate. As the radar locks in and as the spacecraft descends closer and closer to the Earth, or the Moon in this case, then it becomes more accurate than this primary guidance and navigation system, which has brought them this far. And gradually, the radar becomes the more accurate of the two guidance systems, and it exerts a greater and greater influence on the automatic descent. This will be a semi-automatic descent, incidentally. The command pilot, Neil Armstrong. Let's listen here just a moment.
That's affirmative. Vehicle rigging you 5-by.
Communication has become a bit scratchy there, and I'm sorry, I did not catch exactly what Buzz Aldrin was saying to Charlie Duke in Mission Control.
That's the duration of it.
I don't believe they're going to say anything else. I was just waiting to see if we heard any more signals from up there through all this scratchy.
We should be losing signal fairly soon.
I think another 13 minutes.
Oh, about 13 minutes. Then.
Yes.
And we lose signal for about how long, gentlemen?
We'll lose signal for about 47 minutes. And actually, Bill, that'll occur at 101 hours and 30 minutes ground elapsed time, or approximately 14 minutes from right now.
And we are 101 hours and 16 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11. Have there been any further reports on the distance they're separated now from Apollo Mission Control?
I haven't heard anything in the last few minutes exactly on how this mini football is progressing. Did we explain what the mini football was?
I think that might be a good idea at this point.
Or should we? All right. The maneuver, which the separation maneuver, is performed in such a manner that as the two spacecraft rotate around the... Let's listen.
LOS at 10128, AOS for you, 10215, over.
10215, we should have acquisition signal. That was to Eagle, to the command module. That's ground information on expected loss of signal and then acquisition again as they come around the Moon. As the two spacecraft drift apart, both still in orbit around the Moon, their relative positions to each other trace a path that would be an ellipse, roughly the shape of a football. And that's how the word football came into this to the engineers here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, to engineers like Merle Waugh and John Hammersmith. And then if nothing else is done, if no other maneuvers are performed,
When you're doing the P-52 maneuvering, the S-band high gain went into the stop. Verify that both S-band breakers are in. Over.
That was Charlie Duke saying that when you did the inertial measurement unit realignment, that's called the P-52, that something there went into the stop. Check it. He's asking that they check it out. Anyway, if the two spacecraft do not make any more maneuvers after one of these thrusters puts them in, thrusting maneuvers puts them into this mini football, they will drift back together one revolution later.
At the time of the firing of the descent engine for Eagle, the lunar module, The spacecraft will be on the backside of the moon. And
DOI, over.
There it is. There's Houston giving Eagle the go for DOI.
DOI, do you have LOS and AOS time? Roger for you, LOS 10128. AOS 10216, over.
That was Buzz Aldrin asking for LOS and AOS times.
And Buzz, S-band steerable update for you on the angles at AOS 219er and yaw 30, over.
That's telling him how to tune in his antenna to the Earth.
Roger, that's in the flight plan, thank you.
That's in the flight plan, Buzz says. Roger, thank you. At 101 hours, 28 minutes, Eagle should go behind the moon, and at 102 hours, 16 minutes, according to the refined tracking information here on Earth, we should see them again on the other side of the moon as they come back into view and the antennas lock on.
And the firing should have taken place then, perhaps 10 minutes before, on the backside of the moon, the firing of the descent engine.
Right. Exactly 10 minutes before.
And that will be the big moment we're waiting for, to find out if that engine has fired successfully. But we'll have to wait about 47 minutes or so.
That's Mike Collins asking for a systems check sometime before LOS. You see, the two craft now each have different LOS and AOS, or loss of signal and acquisition of signal times. Two craft are being tracked by the same antenna on Earth. They're all being tracked with different frequencies up in that unified S-band region of the radar spectrum.
Torquing angles, now 93 on 4 zeros and a 3 are minus 00292 plus 00289 minus 00094.
That's Armstrong. That's Armstrong giving what he calls torquing angles.
You can torque it, over.
Houston says, go ahead, you can torque it. We might in just a moment ask one of our NASA engineers what that torquing angle means. One of you want to explain that?
Who wants to explain that? The torquing?
Bill, I think we might have been looking at something else while that transmission was going on.
All
but
right.
If I have it right, I think what we're talking about here is torquing the inertial platform to a new alignment to make it as close as possible to
going
a precise
over the hill,
alignment.
7 minutes to LOS.
That word to Columbia, meaning 7 minutes until it goes over the hill or loss of signal. Yes, Bill, torquing angles. We just heard Neil Armstrong discussing what he thought his torquing angle should be.
Okay, well, that's then evidently what they're talking about, is torquing that inertial platform to the proper inertial reference, so that all the angles then that were given to them by the ground and that they've computed on board will be in a precise direction for the burns that they will be conducting.
If we were looking at the moon, then the spacecraft will be moving back behind the moon on what we would call the left-hand side, or the western side of the moon.
The spacecraft are moving at some 4,000 kilometers per hour right now. Both are 111 kilometers above the surface, approximately. They are separated. Each will disappear behind the moon at a slightly different time. And when we hear from them again, 7 minutes later, the lunar module Eagle should be descending from 111 kilometers above the surface down toward 15 kilometers above the surface. Then we will have them in view and should be able to monitor the powered descent and touchdown.
Rhett, what generally will be the attitude of the Eagle from DOI until the power descent initiation?
Well, when they come around to PDI, they will be looking face down briefly, then they go to a face up position during that power descent, and they won't even be able to see the moon during part of that very high-powered rocket firing until they begin to tilt over and can look through the window.
And that final descent takes only about 10 to 12 minutes, does it not? And it's more like an aircraft coming in at an angle. In other words, you're moving over the surface of the moon, lowering your altitude at the same time, moving laterally and moving
vertically.
Vertically.
That's right, and that burn time on the descent propulsion system for that final maneuver that prior to touching down will be, according to flight plan now, 11 minutes and 58 seconds. That may vary depending upon how much maneuvering they have to do terrain avoidance or for any other reason on their descent.
We're about 5 minutes away, I believe, from loss of signal. Some of the signals we heard, some of the communications just a few moments ago, were a bit ragged, noisy.
They still are, as a matter of fact. I'm listening to them down here. I'm trying to turn that noise down a bit, unless they say something.
Have we had many problems?
Well, here's some communication. Would you please select low bit right over?
That was an instruction from the ground to the lunar module to select low bit rate of data transmission.
We'll have 12 minutes. Select ignition, over.
In other words, instead of transmitting a telemetry data back to Earth at a high speed, they're going to a low speed rate.
Mark.
About to get a mark from
ignition.
12 minutes to ignition at that point. That was the Charlie Duke telling Eagle he had 12 minutes mark until ignition for DOI.
That makes ignition almost 2 minutes earlier than what we had recorded earlier, I believe.
That should come at 101 hours, 36 minutes, 14 seconds, or at about 8 minutes, 14 seconds past the hour.
19 hours, 8, Greenwich Mean Time.
That's right. 1908-14, according to the latest figures I heard.
We keep using these terms, DOI and PDI. We mean by DOI, of course, the descent orbit insertion. That is the firing of the descent engine, the first firing of the descent engine of the lunar module. By PDI, that's the powered the descent initiation. That is firing again from the 15-kilometer mark, when you're just 15 kilometers above the surface of the moon, taking it down, throttling it, that is firing the engine, but slowing down as you come down to the surface of the moon. In other words, a kind of reverse action. The more you throttle up the engine, as you can do on the lunar module, the slower the speed of descent. We should say also, shouldn't we, that they have the power to move laterally, that is, sideways, if need be. Marlebois?
Yes, but I would say that that they will not have to do this or even consider doing this until the final vertical portion of the descent, where they can then pick and choose the landing, precise landing point they want to touch down on.
We're now 101 hours and 26 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11. Today, the descent and landing on the surface of the moon. That landing about 1 hour and 15 minutes, or 16 minutes from now. Norm Guerin?
Bill Land, how long could they maneuver laterally to select another site?
Well, with the delta V, that is the difference in velocity calculations that we've done for this particular maneuver, with the fuel load that we have on board, which is the designed fuel load for this mission, it gives us a calculated 2 minutes of hovering capability in the landing area. Now, this, of course, can change depending upon what occurs on the descent. But this is calculated in a what we call a nominal case situation, so that we plan on having that much fuel left when we reach the landing site, approximately enough for 2 minutes of hovering.
And then, of course, if the astronaut himself takes over part of this automatic system and zooms on down there a little sooner or with a little more speed, he might have a little more fuel than that even. Depends on how Armstrong happens to take over, doesn't it?
That's right, Rhett, and I might add here, too, that that final portion of the descent, the last couple of hundred feet, is done extremely slowly, at approximately 3 feet per second. That's what I wanted to add at this point. It's a very slow descent from a couple of hundred feet on down.
We should.
About half a minute now until we should have loss of signal on the lunar module, on Eagle. We're listening to a very, very scratchy and noisy radio link from the moon. I think we have LOS now.
We're past 101.28.
Considerably.
101 hours and 28 minutes. Signal probably.
Here's Apollo Control.
Loss of signal now. The spacecraft Eagle has been given a go for descent orbit insertion. That maneuver to occur in 7 minutes 40 seconds. Out of contact, out of radio contact. The DOI maneuver scheduled to come at 101 hours, 36 minutes, 14 seconds. It will be a 76.4 foot per second burn. The burn duration, 29.8 seconds. And the resulting orbit for the LEM will be 57.2 by 8.5 nautical miles. When next we acquire the lunar module, it should be at an altitude of about 18 nautical miles on its way down to the low point of about 50,000 feet from where the powered descent to the lunar surface will begin. As the spacecraft went around the corner, all systems on both vehicles look very good. Everything is go here in mission control and aboard the spacecraft for the descent orbit insertion to occur in 6 minutes 38 seconds. This is Apollo Control, Houston, at 101 hours, 29 minutes.
And that very interesting and information-full bit of information from Doug Ward, the mission commentator for this particular shift of flight controllers. That's Eugene Kranz, who is the chief of the flight operations division there in the Mission Control Center. He is a deputy to Christopher Kraft, the director of flight operations for the Manned Spacecraft Center, and Kranz himself is conducting this touchdown on the surface. His deputies, Glenn Lunny, Cliff Charlesworth, and Jerry Griffin, handling other parts of this mission. Kranz himself has been rehearsing, and with his particular team of flight controllers, they've been rehearsing this final touchdown portion with for months. Over and over again. I think Neil Armstrong has flown some 100 simulations of the lunar touchdown.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting worldwide with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Now 101 hours and 31 minutes into its flight. We're now moving into what we call LOS, the loss of signal, as the two spacecraft move behind the moon. In about 5 minutes from now, the firing of that big descent engine on the lunar module, taking it down to a height of about 15 kilometers. However, we will not get confirmation of that for some time, until, of course, we reacquire a signal and a reconfirmation of the firing of the engine. The Voice of America's continuous coverage of all events in the lunar landing of Apollo 11. This program is originating in Washington. We will return to our live Voice of America coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
Egyptian and Israeli planes crossed the ceasefire line this afternoon to bombard each other's missile and gun positions and radar stations on the two sides of the Suez Canal. Egypt says 17 Israeli planes have been downed in aerial dogfights and by ground fire along various sectors of the waterway. Israel reports 5 Egyptian planes shot down and the loss of 2 of its own. As of last report, heavy ground action between Israeli and Egyptian positions was continuing. It is not yet known if United Nations truce observers have been successful in bringing about a ceasefire. General Earl Wheeler, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, left Saigon Sunday after a 4-day assessment of the situation in South Vietnam. He told reporters he saw no political meaning in the current scaled-down level of enemy attacks. General Wheeler said enemy infiltration, although comparatively less than last year, is continuing, and he noted that communist combat activity has always occurred in cycles. General Wheeler declined to discuss future U.S. troop withdrawals, but said the South Vietnamese armed forces were making progress in increasing their combat capability. In the war, government troops reported capturing 15 tons of ammunition at communist supply points near the western sector of the demilitarized zone. Enemy gunners shelled the Bien Hoa Air Base north of Saigon, causing light damage and casualties, and sent two rockets into the capital. It was the fourth attack against Saigon this month. In West Berlin, swastikas were found smeared today, the 25th anniversary of the bomb plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler, on a memorial to victims of Nazi Germany. Police said they found 15 swastikas painted on the walls and floors of Plötzensee prison, where conspirators in the assassination attempt were hanged. Speaking earlier at a gathering marking the anniversary of the plot, West German President Gustav Heinemann warned against any resurgence of nationalism. Today, he said, a national-minded German can only be a European. Reuters reports that a Canadian civil servant will go on trial in the Czechoslovak town of Ústí on the River Elbe tomorrow on charges of spying for an unnamed third country. Havana, Cuba, today welcomed a small Soviet naval task force of seven ships, the first time such Soviet war vessels have anchored on the island. The event was covered extensively by Cuban radio and television, and thousands of Cubans gathered along the waterfront to witness the arrival of the flotilla. The Soviet Union has announced that its spacecraft, Luna 15, has moved into a new orbit, taking the ship to within 16 kilometers of the moon's surface. Earlier, the Jodrell Bank Observatory in Britain had noted the change in Luna's orbit. Spokesmen at the observatory said the new path brought Luna somewhat closer to the orbit of Apollo 11. There was speculation among British scientists that Luna's changed orbit meant either that the Soviet craft was preparing to land or to carry out reconnaissance on the Apollo mission. But Sir Bernard Lovell, director of the observatory, said extreme care would be needed in interpreting the development. That's the news from the Voice of America, Jim Hamilton reporting.
The Voice of America continuing its worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Today, the lunar landing. Let's go to Houston, the Manned Spacecraft Center, and correspondent Rhett Turner for a direct report.
20 seconds, rather, from ignition.
Here's mission control.
Descent orbit insertion. That will be a 29.8-second burn of the 9,800-pound thrust descent propulsion system. We should be burning at this time. The result of this maneuver will be to put the spacecraft into an orbit 57.2 by 8.5 nautical miles. It would remain in that orbit until powered descent.
That would reduce the orbit from 110 to 15 kilometers. That 57.2 by 8.5, that means that its high point would then be 110, low point 15.
We should have cutoff by this time. That should have completed the descent orbit insertion maneuver.
A breaking
maneuver.
We would
expect to reacquire the command module first. Command module acquisition time is 102 hours, 14 minutes, 38 seconds. That will be just about 2 minutes prior to the time that we will reacquire the lunar module. LEM acquisition time is 102 hours, 16 minutes, 25 seconds. That is about 37 minutes, 20 seconds from now on the CSM, and about a little less than 2 minutes longer than that for the LEM. At 101 hours, 37 minutes, this is Apollo Control, Houston.
That's most of the information we need at this point from Apollo Mission Control. The burn should have been completed by now, according to all of the flight planning and trajectory information. The two spacecraft, both Eagle and Columbia, are out of touch behind the moon as we view it from Earth. And if that burn did go on time, then the Eagle spacecraft, the lunar module, is now beginning its descent from 110 kilometers above the moon down to 15 kilometers above the moon. And if the burn went according to schedule, it would appear and lock in with the Earth with its radar signals 2 minutes after the command module comes around the other side of the moon, because it's passive at this point. The command module continues to stay in that 110-kilometer near-circular orbit of the moon.
At this point, we might recap for our Voice of America listeners some of the events that have already taken place in the beginning of the descent of the lunar landing craft to the surface of the moon. The touchdown, not much more than 1 hour away. I'll ask our NASA colleague Bill Land to stand by and correct me on any of these facts as we go down them. At about 1:47 in the afternoon Washington time, or about 17:47 Greenwich Mean Time, the two craft, the Eagle and the Columbia, the command module, undocked. That was done by a brief firing of the reaction control system. These are the small thrusters on the command module. They separated first up to a distance, or undocked rather, up to a distance of about 40 feet, or about 15 meters.
We call that the station keeping maneuver, Bill, and at that time the lunar module began a series of very short bursts on its reaction control system to turn itself around on its axis, so that the command module could look it over and give it a final inspection.
Then at about 18:11 GMT, we had the separation burn. That is the, burning the thrusters on the command module. And then the slow process took about an hour, really, of separation up to about 5 kilometers. Then we had the main event just a few minutes ago of descent orbit insertion. You'll hear those terms a number of times. DOI, the firing of the big descent engine on the lunar module, Eagle, with a thrusting power of about 10,000 pounds. And with the firing of that engine, the spacecraft, the lunar landing craft Eagle, will go down to within 15 kilometers of the surface of the moon, an orbit of about 57.2 by 8.5 nautical miles. This at about the 15 kilometer mark. Then we begin what we call the PDI, the descent, power descent maneuver. That would begin at about 20:05 GMT. A little less than an hour from now. At the moment, the spacecraft are on the backside of the moon. They're out of communication, and we will not have communications with the spacecraft, the two spacecraft now, for about 35 minutes or so.
Bill, prior to that maneuver you were talking about, the final descent to the surface of the moon, there will be a very important go-no-go decision that will be made, and that will happen just shortly after the spacecraft comes in view of the manned spaceflight network coming around the eastern or right-hand side of the moon. When it does, the network will take a look, the mission control will take a look at the spacecraft systems, and if everything is well at that time, they will be given a go for the powered descent.
Edwin Buzz Aldrin, with the aid of Commander Armstrong, will guide the lunar module on its descent path to the lunar surface. In Houston a few days ago, Rhett Turner talked to lunar module pilot Aldrin about these very critical maneuvers.
Buzz, during the final phases of the lunar landing, you're quite busy, as is Neil. Would you describe what's happening during that final approach and landing phase of the mission?
We've now passed the point where any subsequent decision not to continue landing would commit us to making use of the ascent engine and to staging. So at this point, we're very interested in the status of the various systems that would be called on and used in the event we were to run into any difficulty. As we are now proceeding lower in the vicinity of 5,000-6,000 feet, we now are pitching over to the point where we can pick up the visibility, the first visibility of the potential landing site. The computer is displaying to us now our depression angle so that through the landing point designator, by looking along this depression angle, we can see exactly where the computer thinks the landing site will be. The computer is also displaying to us our altitude rate in feet per second and our altitude in feet above the ground. On the alternate guidance system or the abort guidance system, we also have the capability of calling up these same pieces of information to confirm that both guidance systems are performing satisfactorily. We have also displays now of the radar, the landing radar information that is being incorporated into the guidance system. As we approach closer down in the vicinity of 2,000 feet, it is my task to update the altitude that is in the abort guidance system to be more correctly in agreement with what the primary guidance system has. The primary purpose of this is to afford it a more accurate set of initial conditions if it were required to be used to put us back into orbit immediately.
How late can you get down close to the surface and still stage abort?
We essentially have the capability of aborting at any point in the descent. The initial action that would be taken with during any decision not to land would be an immediate throttle up of the descent engine and notifying the computer that we elect to proceed in an abort mode. This immediate throttle up would arrest any rate of descent that we have. We would then make a decision as to which guidance system we wish to continue with.
The pings or the ags?
Pings or ags, that's right. That's the first decision we actually make when we reach an abort. Which system will we use? Now, since we've throttled up, the fuel consumption on the descent engine is going to increase considerably. So we'd be very closely monitoring the fuel quantity as displayed to us on two redundant percentage display meters. And when this fuel quantity approaches about 2%, we would then select the ascent engine by means of the abort stage switch, which essentially discontinues thrust on the descent engine, stages the vehicle, drops away the descent stage, and fires the ascent engine and several tenths of seconds.
Several tenths of a second? That was my next question. How fast could you actually go to this abort mode, should you need to?
Essentially, instantaneously. Now, the ascent engine does have lower acceleration than full thrust with an empty descent stage. So the ability to arrest a rate of descent is greater with 100% descent engine throttle setting than with the abort stage. There is a region in the descent where, depending upon the delay that would take place if the descent engine were to just all of a sudden stop, there is a region that people have chosen to call the dead man's curve, which occurs very closely in the vicinity of 100 to 125 feet, where if we were to wait this full 4 seconds, we would not be able to successfully abort. But if some problem were to develop at that point in the mission, I feel quite confident that we can beat 4 seconds at least by a factor of four.
And then a nominal touchdown would progress how?
Well, this would probably proceed in a sequence where at about 2,000 to 1,000 feet, we would make a final decision as to any redesignation that might be made. And a redesignation is a method of signaling the primary guidance computer that you wish to wish it to select an alternate landing place, either to the left or to the right, or downrange or back closer to us. And we do this by making appropriate signals to the hand controller. But when we get to a point around 1,000 feet, the capability of getting much for this is pretty well diminished. As we pass this point, we have already verified the control, the manual control, by means of at higher altitudes, putting the guidance switch from automatic to attitude hold, and manually flying it to zero out the attitude error needles. We'd then give it back to the automatic system because it does a very fine job of flying. And the reason we take over is just to assess the manual capability. This option would probably be used then for any last second changes, which judging by the areas that we're going into, I think the chances is fairly high that we will elect to use this manual option of redirecting in terms of 50, maybe 100 feet laterally to one side, or maybe extending our range some to avoid some crater, some irregularity in the surface, or maybe just to select a smoother area in comparison to the relative terrain. Now, having taken over manually the control of the vehicle, we'd also want to make adjustments in the rate of descent, and we can do this by means of a rate of descent switch. And as soon as we start to throw this little toggle switch, either up or down, the computer immediately says, all right, you want to control vertical velocity from this point on. I will give you the vertical velocity that you have right now, or change it by 1 foot per second for each switch actuation. And this appears to give us extremely good control over the final phase of descent. It's called a semi-automatic throttle. Actually, the computer controls the throttle, but we tell it what we want. And this, we hope, will give us our best chance for a successful landing.
Thanks very much, Buzz Aldrin, for describing this descent and touchdown.
Rhett Turner's conversation with Eagle pilot Edwin Aldrin a few days ago in Houston. Now, 101 hours and 50 minutes into the mission of Apollo 11.
And the two spacecraft, now separated, of course, moving on the backside of the moon. The lunar module, Eagle, having fired its descent engine and moving down toward the surface of the moon. We'll move to within 8.5 nautical miles, or about 15 kilometers, of the surface of the moon. That orbit will be about 15 by 110 kilometers. When we reacquire the communications with both the craft, the lunar module, should be about 18 nautical miles above the surface of the moon, or roughly about 25 kilometers. At this point, I'd like to bring back once again Bill Land and Merle Waugh, our two colleagues from NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, to discuss some of the things that Buzz Aldrin was talking about in this lunar descent, the descent to the moon. I'd like to pick up at the point that we call PDI, that is the powered descent insertion, which comes at about 20 hours 5 Greenwich Mean Time. That would be in about 40 minutes or so from now. Up to that point, we will be moving down in what you call an elliptical orbit, this 15 by 110 kilometer orbit, moving down to that low point of 15 kilometers. When we reach that point, what happens, Bill Land?
Well, Bill, if we were to do absolutely nothing at that point, when we reach the low point, approximately 15 kilometers, in about 40 minutes, the spacecraft would return to the altitude that the command and service module are in, 111 kilometers, another one-half of revolution later, or about an hour later, on the backside of the moon. However, at this point, at this low point in the present orbit of the lunar module, the descent engine will be fired in what we call a retrograde direction. That is, just opposite of the direction of motion, such that it will slow the spacecraft down. Slowing it down then will cause it to fall closer and closer to the lunar surface, and the propulsion system will continue to burn, continue to slow the craft down, and it will go through several phases of this operation until it's finally in a vertical position about 500 feet above the surface, at which point then it very slowly lowers itself to the surface, much like a helicopter does on Earth.
Well, this is the great unknown point, or period, I should say, this 12 minutes or so from the low point, the 15-kilometer point above the surface of the moon, when we fire that engine again for a descent. And the astronauts, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, will be very busy, will they not, in trying to follow every gauge and watching the surface of the moon coming up, moving very quickly and making very quick decisions. Of course, some of this will be automatic, will it not? Here is Apollo Mission Control.
We're now about 20 minutes, 45 seconds from reacquiring the command module on the 14th revolution. The time until the ignition for the powered descent is 38 minutes, 55 seconds. Air mission control, people still standing and waiting. I believe back in the viewing room, we probably have one of the largest assemblages of space officials that we've ever seen in one place. Included among the viewers are Dr. Thomas Paine, NASA Administrator, Jim Elms, Director of the Electronics Research Center at Cambridge, Dr. Abe Silverstein, Director of NASA's Lewis Research Center, Rocco Patrone, Director of Launch Operations at Kennedy Space Center is there. From Marshall Space Flight Center, we have Dr. Werner von Braun, the director, and his deputy, Dr. Eberhard Ries. Also a large number of astronauts, including Tom Stafford, Eugene Cernan, Jim McDivitt, and John Glenn. We also see Dr. Kurt Debus, director of the Kennedy Space Center, and Dr. Edgar Courtright, director of the Langley Research Center. Dr. Stork Draper, director of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Instrumentation Laboratory, is also in the viewing room. Here in the control room proper, down on the floor, a number of astronauts, including Pete Conrad, Fred Hayes, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders. And Donald K. Slayton, director of flight crew operations at the Manned Spacecraft Center. Sitting beside us in the back row of consoles here is Dr. Robert Gilruth, director of the Manned Spacecraft Center. Farther down along the lines, General Sam Phillips, director of the Apollo program. Also, Chris Kraft is here, director of flight operations at the Manned Spacecraft Center, and George Lowe, the Apollo spacecraft program manager. We also see in the back viewing room Secretary of the Air Force, Siemens, and many others whom I'm sure we can't see through the glass. We are now 18 minutes, 10 seconds until reacquisition of the spacecraft. Ignition for the powered descent to the lunar surface is 36 minutes, 30 seconds away. At 101 hours, 57 minutes, this is Apollo Control, Houston.
That announcement from Doug Ward, speaking to us from within the Mission Control Center, describing the activities and the people there watching this historic event. We can see on closed circuit also television monitors, which enable us to know what's going on in there also. The men in the front row, the flight dynamics officers, the second row, the guidance officers, the environmental control officers, the doctors, all watching their monitor consoles, information being fed in from hundreds of support personnel in other rooms, on other floors of the Mission Control Center. A very busy place at this moment.
Here in our Apollo News Center in Washington, we were in the midst of a discussion, a roundtable discussion, really, with our NASA colleagues, Bill Land and Merle Waugh, on the final phases of the descent. I think we'd gotten down to what we call PDI, the 50,000-foot mark, or about 15 kilometers above the surface. Once we fire the engine at that point, gentlemen, what is the position of the spacecraft